money, money, money. Take my money, take my money. We're going streaky! No, I'm sorry. Sorry, we're going streaking through the quad and into the gymnasium. Come on, everybody! Come on, Snoop! Snoop-a-loop! No, it's cool. I'm cool. Bring your green hat. Let's go.
Hey guys, this is Ralph Shadell with Massive Report, coming to you guys with a fresh episode of the Massive Report podcast. Crew SC are victorious over the New York Red Bulls in a high-scoring affair. Josh Williams sets a little bit of history. Crew SC are now undefeated in 7 straight matches. Crew SC welcomes in DC United, and Major League Soccer is not immune from the political climate. So get ready for the next episode of Massive Report. Get your refreshments ready. Put those earbuds in. Drive to Grandma's. Say hi to her like you did last week. And get ready to listen to a brand new episode of the Massive Report podcast. It's September 25th. Let's get going.
Hey, buddies. It is the Massive Report brought to you by Land Grant Brewing Company at 424 West Town Street in East Franklinton and available in a craft beverage retailer of any repute near you. Head over to landgrantbrewing.com for more info. And the Old North Arcade, 2591 North High Street, 21 and up barcade with dozens of classic arcade games, foosball, air hockey, and a dope porch. Head to oldnortharcade.com for more info there. It is episode 246 of this very distinguished podcast. We're recording on Monday, September the 25th. Do a quick roll call. My name's Bart. We've got Patrick Murphy with us. Pat, how you doing?
I'm splendid.
Awesome. That's great to hear. Ralph Shudell with us as well, and on the ones and twos. How you doing, Ralph?
Ready to play some FIFA 18. My copy gets dropped tomorrow because I'm a sucker, and I bought the Ronaldo edition for Football Ultimate Team.
Who ended up getting on the... Maybe that's another thing we can talk about maybe in this show, the just snubbing once again Justin Miram got this time on the FIFA customized cover. We'll circle back. I'm going to put a pin in that one. We're going to circle back a little bit later because we also have to welcome Mr. Alex Stanek back after a week off. As I informed the public, you were telling third graders about how great Italian football was. So we're going to stick with that for continuity reasons.
Well, that's not true. Well, it's close. I was actually going through the history of Juventus Football Club and their many incidents of cheating and letting the younger generation know to stay the heck away. Speaking of which, Juventus president Andrea Agnelli was banned from soccer for the year. he has been banned just today for a year for selling tickets to criminals. So at below face value. So they can profit.
What's wrong with that? Criminals need soccer too.
Yeah.
It's a mafia law in Italy. You're not allowed to help the mafia, and he was helping the mafia because they're terrible.
You got to get your side hustle on, dude.
So what does like the effect of banning an owner actually end up being? Like, so it's
basically
like,
nothing.
Yeah, he's not allowed in like the stadium. Is he?
He's not allowed at parties.
Sorry, your money's.
He's not allowed to go to parties representing Juve for a year. But he's allowed to go to the stadium because he owns it. So it's super stupid. But he got banned, which means another year of cheating jokes on my Twitter feed. If you haven't already muted me, do so today.
That's we'll make sure to be ready for that also here on this podcast. So Ralph, need you to have the quick fingers in case Alex goes on too far of a tangent. But no, I think we've got enough to cover and hopefully some good other tangents MLS related that we can get on. But we do have a lot to talking about. Speaking of getting on, the streak Columbus Crew remains on 7 undefeated now in a row for Columbus, picking up a big 3-2 win over New York Red Bulls on Saturday. We'll recap that game. I'll also look at what the playoff picture is looking like for Columbus now as they're getting ready to head into their final home game of the season this Saturday. Oh, at least home regular season game, knock on wood, for maybe some postseason play. They'll take on DC United Saturday, perhaps even a visit from Steve Clark there, and then we'll take a look elsewhere around MLS and the sporting world in general. It's a big news weekend in sports, and MLS not on the outside looking in on that stuff. But first, let's head back to Saturday and Patrick Murphy, that 3-2 win for Columbus in a game that you liked what you saw from Pipe Higuain. We've been talking about it a lot, but he seems to really be hitting his stride here at the right time. 3 assists in the game.
Yeah, fantastic game from Pipe there. And, you know, we've talked a lot recently about the play of Ola Kamara, you know, the addition of Pedro Santos, last week, Kakuta Mane. You know, not that we forgot about Higuain, but it's nice to see him kind of, you know, make sure that everyone remembers him. It started early on with a free kick from the bench side of the field. Very good ball played into the box that was about right exactly where you want it. Not the best defending by New York, but a good run from Jonathan Mensah headed home to give the team an early lead. A disappointing goal to give up just a few minutes later to Bradley Wright Phillips. I'm still not sure what the team was mad about after the goal. Zach Steffen and a few of the other guys were yelling at the official there. The only thing I get to see was maybe they wanted a foul on Sean Davis for taking the ball from Mohamed Abou, but it looks like he just kind of fell over. So, but Columbus come back in the second half. Justin Marum with a good, very typical Justin move, takes a defender 1v1, cuts to the inside, and curls a shot back post, this time from in the box, so I'm not sure it's a meat hook variety, but another assist from Higuain on that one where he had a nice little turn in midfield and a great through ball that sprang it. And then Josh Williams scores what ends up being the winner off a corner kick. He just kind of charged through the box. A powerful header that Robles actually got a hand on, and if it wasn't as hit as hard as it was by Josh, probably could have saved. And then a penalty kick in the 72nd minute. Gonzalo Varone cuts back right at the end line. Jonathan Mensah, already sliding. His arm kind of catches him, and there was some debate about whether or not the play happened out of bounds and what that meant. Somebody tweeted to us in kind of the exchange there that it doesn't matter, in the laws of the game, and they, had a screenshot of it. If it's, if it goes to the closest spot on the field, and if it would have been in the box, it would be a penalty kick. So that doesn't matter. But there was contact, debatable whether or not it brought Varone down, but it just certainly impeded him. But in the end, it doesn't matter. Columbus, dominate the rest of the match. Patrick Goldan wrote something today in the Sixth Thought box about just kind of how they controlled the end of that game, not letting New York have a shot, not letting them complete a pass in the attacking third, things like that. So kind of a really promising defensive closeout, I think. And that's a good sign given that just a week ago we saw this team give up a very late goal to have 3 points snatched away on the road to Vancouver. So, we heard this week about Greg Berhalter talking about that game and that it's a learning experience. It looks like the team, at least for this week, learned something from that one.
Certainly the case, and a big win that puts some more breathing room, I believe, 8 points between Columbus and Montreal, and makes Columbus a contender, Ralph, at least perhaps pushing Chicago for that 4th spot. Again, just a point behind Chicago, but a game in hand, the Fire have. But the Fire, they have been unraveling of late.
I've talked to a couple of the guys over at our sister site at SB Nation, and basically the sky's falling down for them. Nikolic has cooled off substantially from the early season tear that he was on. Bastian Schweinsteiger is currently out with a lingering knee issue. It looks like it may be the same one that was hampering him during his time at Manchester United. And they can't get a consistent goal scorer going. It's kind of the flavor of the week with Michael Deleu or David Accom, and Jorginho, who doesn't like to play Crew SC, as Patrick's noted numerous times.
He does not.
Isn't really playing consistency. Dax is really the only solid player that they have that's done a really nice job for the Fire. And their defense, led by Matt Lampson, who will never stop letting you hear the fact that Thierry Henry scored him on the Olympico goal from several years ago, they can't get settled at the back. They have a young defense. And it's just they built this lead, and it's unfortunately for them. I mean, fortunately for Crew SC, but unfortunately for them, it can't sustain it throughout the year. So now you're looking at a very real possibility, should Columbus continue on with the stretch that they're experiencing right now, that they could finish in third place, particularly if the Fire begin to continue this unraveling.
Certainly, excitement for Columbus in at least the playoff chances. But one of the things we saw in that this game back on Saturday, take it back, was once again Jonathan Mensah now picking up his second goal with Columbus. Second goal, I believe, in what three or four game span. And Alex, I know you've been on the Jonathan Mensah hype train for quite some time, so I want to give you a little bit of time to like drive around and toot your own horn and toot the horn of Jonathan Mensah, because right now he is looking like a designated player.
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm on the hype train for about half of this roster right now, so maybe it's a little unfair to toot my own horn on this, but Mensah is looking like a DP caliber defender. He's adjusted to this league, and I think that we're going to see more consistency from him than we saw in the first half of the season. With any DP player, you're going to want to judge them very quickly. We all do it, whether we say positive or negative things. But really, when you start to get towards the end of that first season to even the beginning of that second season, that's when you really start seeing, okay, is there a quality player here, or is this a player who is simply not going to be able to adapt to the league that he's been signed in? And I think Mensah is one of these players who's going to do well. He's incredibly physical. He's got okay positioning. I think positioning might be one of his weaker spots. And then he's a little weak in 1v1 situations at times. He tends to go for the tackle too much, I think. But his ability in the air is incredible. And physicality in this league is so important, and he is just a monster in terms of physicality. I hope that he stays here a long time. I think that he's a good player to have around. I think he's going to be a great mentor for Lawless Abubakar. He seems like a great guy on and off the pitch, which is always helpful when you're kind of mentoring these young players. You don't want to turn them into party animals or anything like that. He seems like a good role model. I'm feeling really good about Mensah, but also this entire team. I think when you look at this team, this is a team that's getting hot and finding their form and finding their system at the right time. If you find it early on in the season, you run the risk of people figuring out how to counter individual players, how to counter the way individual players interact with one another. I think that's something that happened after our MLS Cup run. We kept the system basically the same. We kept the roster basically the same. We have some new pieces on this team right now that teams have not really figured out yet. Mensah being one of them, and Pedro Santos as well. So I think when you add all that together, plus you have this resurgence in form from Federico Higuain, I think things are looking good. If we can keep this up for another month or so, we're going to be a hot team going into the playoffs. And like anybody's ever told you in this league, anything can happen in the playoffs. And so, who knows? But I'm feeling good about things.
And certainly it's a great point. You talk about the pieces that they've added, like Pedro Santos. But you also, I think, have to look at the way that the games have expanded, or certain players' games have expanded in their roles in recent weeks. Remember at the beginning of the season just how futile it seemed like every set piece opportunity or corner kick was for Columbus. But now over these past six games, you've got four goals from center backs alone. I mean, we were talking a couple weeks ago about how Jonathan Mensah's goal was one of the first goals for center backs, you know, in quite some time, or the Lawless Abubakar one, maybe it was. But you look at the fact that they've got this many goals now. You've got all these players that are starting to contribute at every end of the field, and it's got to be a good thing for Columbus.
Certainly. You know, we've talked before this year and in other years about how this team can be, you know, a little bit reliant on the attacking you know, whether it's a trio, you know, it was Kai Kamara in 2015, just, you know, overly reliant on some of these offensive guys and not getting contributions from, you know, the midfield, be it, you know, Will Trapp, Tony Chani at one point, Arthur and Abu this year have not been able to add to goal stuff. But, you know, if you can complement it with these center backs contributing on set pieces the way that they have recently, you know, that gives you an added dimension, I guess, going forward. And, you know, this is the time when you certainly want to do that. You know, what Kruse have now, on top of Higuain's ability to send in a dangerous set piece, is Pedro Santos. You know, a left-footed player, gives them a different look from every free kick. They can send in-swinging corners from each side now, which is dangerous. And something that Greg Berhalter's talked about recently is it's kind of provided a spark in terms of the desire of these guys. And he said Saturday after the game, you know, these guys know they're going to score. And you could see that with Jonathan's run, with Josh's run. Both of these guys were very determined to get on the end of that ball and put it in the net. You saw earlier in the year, Jonathan's confidence probably just wasn't where it needed to be when he was getting on the end of these free kicks, these corner kicks, putting balls wide, putting balls over. But once they started to see them go in, I think that really helped. And, you know, I guess Josh said after the game, he told Jonathan when he scored that opening goal, you know, I'm going to get one tonight too. And he said when he was talking to us, you know, I just had a feeling that I would find one. I think, correct me if I'm wrong here, Ralph, 2013 was the last time Josh scored a goal?
April 20th. 2013, yeah. Ironically, against DC United, and Higuain was the assist on that one.
Right, mm-hmm. And, you know, it took Josh a long time. I remember talking to him back in the day about that, you know, just how long it took him to find the back of the net, and that he was kind of pressing for that and whatnot. So, you know, nice to see. Obviously, you want to see the guys up top scoring, and obviously Justin Merrim did that. Ola Kamara had a chance. We didn't talk about that gaffe, but, you know, so there's still chances for these attacking four guys, but you know, you want to be able to have some options, and they certainly do right now.
One thing I will add real quick on that I've noticed, and I like what you said on that, Patrick, was that, you know, there's a point earlier in the season prior to the arrival of Pedro Santos that I would have told you that Federico Higuain is much more effective with the ball in motion rather than from a restart situation. It seems that ever since Pedro Santos has arrived, that they're playing off one another. Their chemistry between those two players is absolutely phenomenal. And it seems like, dare I say it, and this is pure speculation, but Higuain seems a little more happier that, you know, Crew SC seem to be playing a free-flowing type of offense, and they seem to be getting in the right attacking areas, and the players are getting into the channels and doing what they need to do. And also, like you were saying, the players are going to the net with purpose. Anytime that you get two goals, we'll start with one goal from your center back, you're probably going to have a pretty solid day, but anytime you get two, it's likely you're going to get 3 points in the end.
Yeah, and we were talking after the game, Michael Ares, who's, you know, long time worked for the Dispatch and covered this team throughout that time, trying to remember the last time they had two set piece goals that weren't from a, you know, a penalty kick. And he asked Greg couldn't remember them having that having happened during his tenure, and Greg's usually pretty good about that stuff. So, you know, it's certainly been a while. I mean, it may be as far back as that 2008 team, or at least when Scalotta was here. You know, it's no easy way to look that up unless you want to go game at a time, but it's certainly been a while. If anyone does remember, let us know. But to get two set piece goals is big, and, you know, it's only going to increase the confidence of them taking those and scoring off them going forward, I think.
Two set-piece goals and three assists for Pepe Higuain. Those assists, by the way, bring him up to 10 on the season. And that is a season high, or career high for Federico, at least since he came to Columbus back in 2012. Never hitting that 10 goal or 10 assist mark until now. Sits as well with 9 goals, just 2 short of his career high with Columbus. He's hit in 11, I believe, twice, if I'm not mistaken, yep, in the 2013 and 2014 campaigns. But Federico Higuain, and in only 23 games played right now this season, I mean, if you're looking at hockey, this is, you know, almost a point per game type player, and you're seeing this from him at age 32 now. And again, is a guy in his
the last year of his contract, if he's playing for a new contract, Alex, and everyone, he's going to have some pretty strong bargaining chips because he might put up his best statistical season with Columbus.
Yeah, and I'm to the point where it's going to be a disaster if he doesn't want to stay here. For me, anyway, I love everything about Federico Higuain. I love the way he plays. I love his mentality. Every time he does one of these post-game interviews, it's the perfect response to whatever question is asked. I just think he is the perfect talisman for this Columbus Crew SC team under Greg Berhalter. I'm not sure what the situation is with that contract. I'm not sure if it's a situation where Greg thinks it's time to move on. I'm not sure if it's a situation where Federico Higuain thinks it's time to move on, if he wants to go back to Argentina, something like that. I hope desperately that they can work something out, because I think he is, I think number one, he still has a lot to give. And number two, I think he's just the perfect guy from a locker room perspective for these young guys to be looking up to. So I hope they can get something done. I'm not sure how this whole system really works without him. I mean, I suppose you could pitch Santos in the middle, something like that. But I really just don't know. You would have to go get a number 10 and try to get somebody who's identical to Pipa. And I think it's just so much better to just pay Pipa and keep him around for, you know, two or three more years or however long he's going to be here. I want to see three things happen over the next 10 years with this team in terms of roster situations. I want to see Federico Higuain retire in black and gold. And then I want to see Justin Merrim retire in black and gold. And then I want to see Will Trapp retire in black and gold. That's what I want.
I hope Trapp's not retiring anytime soon.
No. But
I'm just kidding.
I threw it out 10 years, so he'd be what? 36 then? Something like that? He's 26, right?
No,
something
like that? He's like 24, I thought.
Yeah.
Whatever. Then 12 years, whatever. I want to see those guys retire here. I want to see Higuain finish his career here. I want to see Merrim play every single game of his career in black and gold and become one of those kind of one club guys. And I want to see the same thing from Trapp if possible. But Higuain's the priority. I will have to go on hunger strike or something if they don't re-sign him. I'll sit outside Mapfre Stadium and yell for Greg Berhalter until he comes out and talks to me, or until the Columbus Police Department drag me off the premises, which would probably happen first.
This seems a little extreme.
I'm just kidding.
I mean, you're a skinny dude to start off with. You know, we got to get you sustenance, my friend.
You also got to be careful with the Columbus Police Department.
Yeah, that would be trespassing, I'm pretty sure.
looking elsewhere, though, you mentioned Justin Merrim a little bit there, and, you know, as a potential one-team player. Of course, last week we looked at him. He was notably not started. He was Kakutamane getting the start. Greg Berhalter's reasoning being not that you'd seen a dip in performances from Justin Merrim, but just the sheer volume of games, all the travel over the international break, and his appearances with the Iraqi national team. He looked plenty rested and hungry on Saturday with that vintage goal. And again, a guy maybe where we've got a case of, hey, giving him a little bit of rest at the right time and is to get back in his stride, because really after he's cooled off so much since that torrid start over the first season to the point where he was snubbed in the All-Star game. But he hasn't really produced at that high level since. And now you're starting to see Justin Merrim again getting hot.
Yeah, and Justin's one of those guys, you know, he was not pleased to not start last week in Vancouver, despite having come back from Iraq and playing with them and the travel and everything you mentioned, Bart. And, you know, sometimes that comes across as, you know, not being a team guy and being a little arrogant. But I think that, you know, you want a guy on the team who wants to be out there every game. Now, you want him to handle it correctly and whatnot. And I think Justin did that, despite making a few comments that, you know, were saying that he wanted to be out there. You know, having guys that want to play 90 minutes every game, I think is ideally what you want from a player. And especially if the guy is then backing it up, which I think for the most part, Justin's done, not only this year, though obviously this has been a high point of his career, but throughout the last few years of his career under Greg, he's just been a solid contributor, you know, has gone away from some of the selfish, maybe selfish is the right word, but the 1v1 play that he you know, kind of got known for early in his career. Still does it.
Has he really?
Yeah. Well, still does it at times. But I mean, you see Justin get involved with other players. Mm-hmm. He loves playing with Federico Higuain because of what they can do. You know, in combination. You know, I mean, when you have a player that can take players 1v1 like he can, you know, you want him to do it at times when the situation's right. And you know, there are still times when Justin loses the ball because, you know, he's going at guys, but that's going to happen. I think that you know, for the most part, you look at Justin's season. He's been durable. He's been on the field, you know, a ton, and he's been scoring goals, and that's what this team needs from him. He was challenged in the season to take his game to another level, given a new contract, and he's backed it up.
The thing with Justin, and I think a player of his caliber, you know, he's one of those guys that it seems like when you've done what Justin does, playing, you know, he's basically continent hopping. He's playing a game in Iraq on a Tuesday, and he's coming back to Columbus, Ohio to play a game on a Saturday, and then, you know, flying to Vancouver the following week. Justin needs to be his own biggest motivator. And the funny part is that, you know, he seemed rather, like you guys said, disappointed that he didn't start against Vancouver, and almost kind of seemed like it was a huge crime that he wasn't on the pitch necessarily. And Kakuta played wonderfully, as I may add. But, you know, it seems like for Miriam, he's got to be his own biggest fan. And sometimes you need to do that. You think about it, you know, you've got to go be your own big advocate when you're going to go ask for a raise from your boss. Or, you know, you've got to be your biggest fan there, because, you know, for all the crap that Miriam catches on social media and for what he gets into sometimes with fans, and for the crap that people give him, you know, look no further than the Open Cup game in Cincinnati. You know, he's got to go out there and prove the doubters wrong, and he's fantastic. I am absolutely baffled at times. I think he had two fantastic dribbles on Saturday that he got through guys he had absolutely no business getting through and generated a great scoring opportunity. I believe one of them led to the mini meat hook.
Certainly a huge game for Justin, and he continues to flourish, and he's putting together one of his best statistical campaigns. So with that win, Columbus, again, as we alluded to, 47 points on the campaign, 31 games played, just three remaining across in MLS, and they are sitting in that number five seed, but just 2 points separating them from number three Atlanta, though the Atlanta United does have a couple games in hand. You look at some of the other performances around the weekend. You've got, of course, Atlanta helping, although maybe putting some distance between them and Columbus, helping Columbus as well with the defeat of Montreal, Portland defeating Orlando, DC, of course, getting a big game, and I think we'll probably talk a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about that DC game, specifically a couple of performances from players that some familiarity, ones that crew games have. Whoa, hey, what did we get there?
My fault, sorry.
No, wanted to point out, first of all, the start for a certain Steve Clark in that win for DC, but also the terrific goal-scoring performance by Mullins.
Who's that goalkeeper that you guys are talking about?
Yeah, Steve Clark. Last seen at Mapfre Stadium before heading to Europe. I think there's a couple things we should note for this. First, the Steve Clark thing. Bill Hamid is a guy who's obviously been very good for them, been, you know, attracting European attention for a while now, and it sounds like he's probably headed off to Europe after this season. They've had scouting interest, and in fact, a scout was there to watch him Saturday night, and he did not play in favor of Steve Clark. I think that it was more, you know, just that DC wants to see what they've got in Steve to know if, you know, he's the guy that can take over for Bill when he leaves. So that's I think why that happened. Whether or not they'll roll with him next week, I'm not sure. You know, DC's season is all but over. Though they did look impressive in that 4-0 win. Four goals from Patrick Mullins, and Ralph, I'll again double check this with you. First time since Jeff Cunningham in 2011?
Yes.
All right. Yeah, when he did that back against DC.
2009.
Oh, 2009, sorry. 2011 was the last time the crew were seven games unbeaten. Yeah, so a guy who hadn't scored in over a year, had dealt with a lot of injuries. You know, DC has needed some offensive help. They found it in that game. You know, Patrick Mullins is a good player. I'm not sure he's a guy who you're going to see regularly scoring four goals. But, you know, a big boost for them. I don't anticipate it being something that you see, you know, a ton of goals from him going forward. But, you know, he's obviously feeling confident after that game. He's healthy. And he'll come into Mafre trying to continue to ride that.
Going back to the Steve Clark thing, I fully anticipate that he will get a start at Mafre because DC has a midweek game against the Red Bulls, and they don't necessarily take that game entirely lightly, whether they're at the top of the standings or they're at the bottom of the standings. I expect Hamid likely to play in that game, but I wouldn't be shocked. And, man, it's an interesting storyline to see Steve Clark at Mafre Stadium for the first time since MLS Cup. And one of the things when I first heard
not
that he was
MLS
on
MLS Cup.
Not since MLS? Yeah, since 2016.
Year.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. That we skipped that year.
It's traumatic. But, you know, it's funny because I thought about it the second I heard that he was playing in D.C. on Saturday night is how is this player going to be received when he's introduced on the pitch or if he makes a save? Because I know some fans out there, and I talked to a few on Twitter this week, said that, you know, they appreciate the 3 hard years of service that he's given to the club, but other fans are quite bitter for the 27-second mishap on December 6, 2015. Wait, that was the date, right? Yeah, but, you know, it's, you know, a lot of fans are a little bit bitter, including myself at one point, but I've learned and let live. But, you know, you look at Steve Clark, the person, there was a beautiful article about him doing the hospice work that he kept very private. And he was doing great community work in the city of Columbus. And I would like to think and I hope that he gets cheered. But I don't know what type of reaction to anticipate if he starts on Saturday.
Go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm fairly confident that he's going to get some stick from Nordeca. But I think that happens with most players. And often then that player will come over to the Nordeca and everybody will clap for him and it's as if nothing happened. He plays for DC United, which
unless
for me,
you're Greg Berhalter, in which case Nordeca will try to attack you.
Well, that was one time. And I personally tried to intervene against that, so it's not everybody. I do think people are gonna make jokes if he concedes a goal. I'm sure people are going to try a Steve says yes chant or something like that.
No, that's fun.
But that was something that was kicking around in my head for a while. As soon as I saw that was announced, I thought, well, I'm going to shout that to the Capos if he concedes. But Steve's a great guy. Anybody who's met him, and he's very approachable at all those crew parties and things like that. So a lot of crew players did have a chance to talk to him. Really, really good dude. And so I don't really hold it against him for going to DC United. It's not like he requested a trade and said, I want out of Columbus or something like that. I don't think the club really wanted him here anymore. And I think that there was a lot of logic behind that. I think Zach Steffen is a better goalkeeper than Steve Clark. And I think that there's a lot more potential to Steffen than there was for keeping Clark around for another year or two. But Steve's got to earn a living too. And so if he's got to come back to the league and if the team that wants him is DC United, then that's fine. Eric Gehrig went to Chicago Fire and nobody really cared.
Well, Dominic that was on his terms.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and I think Clark's a similar thing.
Yeah, I guess fair enough.
I think Clark was kind of said, was kind of told, hey, we've got this young U.S. national team youth prospect and we want to pursue this. More than we want to pursue you. So it's a tough situation for Steve, I'm sure. I doubt he liked moving to Europe and then having to move back to the United States. What was it, 6 months later? Not even a year later, right? Yeah. So that can't be fun. But I expect he's going to get some stick during the game. I don't think he's going to get much before the game. And if he comes over to Nordeca after the game, I think he'll get a round of applause from the fans.
Unlike Ralph, I do not expect Steve Clark to start this game. So, you know, we can put a side wager on that if you want, Ralph. But I think they go back to Bill Hamid Wednesday and then continue to ride him through the rest of the season. I don't know why you would not. But if Steve plays on Saturday...
Because Ben Olsen.
Yeah. I don't know what that means.
He's very uncharacteristic. He does... When you zig, he zags. He's Ben Olsen.
Okay, well, we'll see on Saturday. If Steve does
Chipotle.
Play...
Chipotle.
All right, we've got a deal.
And it's on recording, too.
You can't.
That's right. So
you can't get guac,
Chipotle
though.
No matter what.
If Steve does play, I would hope that fans would at least, you know, when his... Not that they're on the field anymore, when players, the visiting players' names are announced, but I would hope that, you know, it's not a bunch of boos when he first comes out or whatnot. Now, if you want to give him shtick during the game, I think that makes sense. He's an opposing player, as Alex said. But I think, you know, yes, he made that big mistake in MLS Cup. And that's a mistake that I know for a fact he, you know, still holds on to. At least the last time I talked to him, it was still bothering him that happened and he let the team down. Despite the goals against record, I mean, Steve was a great goalie for this team. And, you know, I know some people only look at the goals that went in the net, but the big saves that he made, you know, he was one of the best in the league, I think, during his time of just coming up with a big save when necessary. You know, he didn't have a good defense in front of him. You know, he was always one of the best in terms of save percentages in the league, or at least up, you know, in towards the top. So, you know, he did a lot for this team. He also allowed them to play that possession style that, you know, none of the other goalkeepers on the roster really would have. Now he, you know, there was some argument about whether or not he was the best fit with his feet. You know, what MLS goalie, you know, is great with his feet? You know, American soccer doesn't teach that nearly as well as some other countries. So, you know, I think that Steve was really good in his 3 years here. You know, I always appreciate him. Like Alex said, he's a great guy off the field as well. I think that, you know, while you give him some shtick during the game, I hope that before or after, if he comes over to the Nordeca, which, knowing Steve, I'm not sure that he will, especially if he gets crap during the game. But if he does, or if there's an opportunity before the game, I hope fans, you know, let him know that they appreciate his time in Columbus.
I just want to add one more thing since we're talking about MLS Cup. That performance, I don't think you can put that on Clark.
Agreed.
It was a... I think people have made Clark the scapegoat for that game.
You had 89
it's
minutes
on
to
Don
score.
Garber. Yeah, the ball goals. Went out of bounds. It's on Don Garber. Why aren't we being constructive and funneling our rage to the one person who is responsible? Don Garber.
I am right with you, Bart. That ball was completely out of bounds. Everybody in Nordeca had a perfect view of it, too, where you just saw the ball go out, and we all were just like, oh, they're going to blow that whistle. And then they didn't blow it. And we were like, oh, my God.
You still had... But, tons of time to score goals for best offense in the league that year.
Absolutely. In that offense did not produce. And it's not going to be.
Oh, somebody.
There's a car alarm going off right outside my apartment, so I do apologize. But you guys want to go?
Steve Clark being angry.
Yeah, it is. But no, I think you cannot place the blame for that game on Clark when the rest of the team played so poorly. Clark did not have a good game. Nobody had a good game. And so that back pass, I don't think ever should have been made for that first one. The second one should have been called off as well. So the whole thing was kind of a comedy of errors, and we win and we lose as a team. I think that Kai Kamara and Ethan Finley and Will Trapp and Federico Higuain and all these guys share just as much blame for that game as Clark. So if people are blaming Clark for that game, they need to look at all those other guys as well. And it was a good run that we had that year. And the further it gets from that game day, the more I kind of appreciate it. I can remember after the Eastern Final, I was at Hendox with a bunch of people, and we brought the TIFO from the stadium that said, "We're not done yet." And we all posed for a picture in front of it, and we were all giving each other hugs and stuff like that. It was a great kind of moment for the Crew community, and Clark was a big part of that run. People forget that we had this great season up until that game, and that Clark was an instrumental part in that. it didn't end the way any of us wanted it to end, and Clark had a part in that, but so did every other player, just like every other player had a part in the beginning. So he's a player of significance in the history of this club, as far as I'm concerned. He's not a legend or anything like that, but he deserves respect when he gets back to Mafre, if he gets back to Mafre. And during the game, do whatever. I think that the rules are kind of they don't really apply so much during the game, but before and after, he deserves respect, and I hope he gets it.
Agreed. Not to play devil's advocate and take a very weird stand against both of you, which I take very uncommonly, but I agree, and you, with that beautiful statement that you said, Alex, it really kind of took the wind out of my sails. Mm. But the thing with Clark's play is notoriously throughout the 2015 season, he held on to the ball just too long at times, and it finally caught him in MLS Cup. And what it was that it set the tone for the day, unfortunately. And, you know, I agree with you guys that there's 89 more minutes to go play a soccer game, but it's just, it's like coming out in a heavyweight fight. You get a sucker punch or you get a haymaker and you're like, oh man, I just got punched in the face. It's time to answer back. And you're kind of staggering up a little bit. Let me kind of go on with this now, and I'll walk it back slightly. What you guys said with Steve Clark is he was very athletic, he was very good, made the key saves when he needed to, didn't really have, like you guys said, the best defense. He had a rotating cast of characters between Parkhurst, Tyson Wall, Gaston Sarro, Nico Ness when he came in at certain points too. It just
Emmanuel
Pogatetz,
feed
the dog.
Mad dog.
I miss Pogatetz, but you know, I'd rather have a show dedicated to Pogatetz. But you know, he set the tone for that game. But I agree with you, Alex. And I mean, that's, now that you said it, I guess it really didn't just hit me till now. But that was really a special time because, you know, I had people that, you know, people often brush us off because they go, "Oh, you talk about the crew, you look at the crew, you watch soccer. Oh, you're kind of different." But then it's like, everybody got wind that Crew SC is in this championship game, and they suddenly took a huge interest into the team, and they said, well, how many games do they have left till they get to the championship, and, you know, who's their star player? And you've got casual people going to the playoff games, taking in the atmosphere, and that was a beautiful chance to build the fan base, and I think it got more fans into the stadium, you know. But for that one time to see the city, and I wasn't here in 08, but to see the city rally around the club, that was a really special time.
Certainly. I was here, and 08 was awesome.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Okay, you know, looking at...
One quick, super quick thing. When you're talking about the feat, I totally agree with you, Ralph. But I also think that this was something that Greg knew basically the entire season, was that he's got this kind of problem where when you back pass it to him, he's going to want to try to find an outlet for that ball before he actually plays it. He doesn't just like to clear it as well as a lot of other players do, but we kind of stuck with that system. So, I mean, even the coaching staff in that game, I think you have to lay some of this blame on Greg and on everybody else on Greg's staff, who came into that game basically saying, we're going to do the same thing we've done every game this season, even though we've had some mixed results and our form let us down. But yeah, I do think that he was not the right fit here. I hate DC United, so I'm not entirely sure I'm ready to say that I hope he's the right fit there. But I hope that a different MLS team picks up Steve Clark. He can go to Sporting Kansas City or to Houston Dynamo or to one of these other teams that I don't care about and prosper there. Please, Steve, don't stay with DC United. I hate them.
Absolutely. For the record, I think Steve Clark should be cheered when he gets his name called. And if he's starting, I think he should get a Bronx cheer every time he actually passes or clears the ball out without turning it over.
Hey.
You know, but speaking of divisive, you know, kind of maybe polarizing topics, one of them being that game back in December of 2015 that I'm now, you know, gonna have to go back to the therapist again because you guys just relitigated it for about 15 minutes. But wanted to look at one of the other things, and you know, a much lighter subject that doesn't get people riled up as much, and that's what professional athletes do during the national anthem. I'm not sure if anybody caught much of the NFL action last weekend, but obviously,
the ratings don't seem to show it.
Yeah, definitely. I guess, you know, let's take it back a little bit earlier. Most people, true listeners here to the Massive Report, are very familiar with Colin Kaepernick, the former San Francisco 49ers quarterback, who's essentially being blackballed by the NFL because he decided to take a knee starting last preseason to bring awareness to police violence against African Americans in this country, systemic issues. It's kind of gone on and spread throughout sports since Kaepernick first began taking a knee, even as now he's no longer again playing in the NFL. Of course, the soccer world was one of the first sports to really get on board with that, with Megan Rapinoe, the women's national team player, taking a knee last year. Of course, then last following, she kind of got blackballed in her own way. There was a lot of, I know with her, I believe her women's team, they decided not to have them come out during the national anthem the following game so that she wouldn't have that opportunity to use that pulpit. Then comes last week, our dear president had some choice words during a campaign rally about athletes and specifically football players and what he thinks NFL owners should do, namely fire the sons of bitches if they were to sit down or take a knee during the national anthem. You saw a lot of NFL teams respond last weekend by either teams, groups taking together, showing their solidarity, whether that's kneeling, locking arms, raising fists, or in the case of several teams not even coming out for the national anthem at all. MLS got the MLS players, I believe, had some words about it as well. And Ralph, I'll let you read the quote.
Yeah, this is a quote that was handed down from the Major League Soccer Players Union, and it says, quote, "To hear the President of the United States single out certain professional athletes and call for their termination of employment was jarring and disappointing, as was his disregard for player health and safety. Like NFL players and players across the North American sports landscape, MLS players spend countless hours off the field doing charitable work that makes a significant impact in the communities in which they play. All players have every right to exercise their constitutional rights, and we will do everything in our power to defend those rights when they are challenged. It is our deepest hope that the solidarity exhibited on a daily basis by professional athletes throughout North America can serve to encourage a more tolerant and less divisive society." End quote.
I think we have something interesting here, because obviously this is a hot-button topic right now. With what went on over the weekend, both with what President Trump said, and you know, it's not only that, you know, you go to the stuff with the NBA and, you know, uninviting the Golden State Warriors to the White House because they were going to discuss, you know, whether or not they were going to go, and Steph Curry and Kevin Durant made comments about, you know, not being so inclined to go. But, you know, I think when we look at MLS, it's a little bit different because it's much more of an international league. Soccer in general is that. You know, I was talking with Andrew King in the press box on Saturday about, you know, who would be guys that might take this first step if MLS players were going to, you know, do something similar to what the NFL has done. Or I believe there were a couple baseball players who did things this weekend as well. You know, and there's not a ton of African-American prominent MLS soccer players. You know, Jozy Altidore is obviously the first name I think that comes to mind for most people. He plays in Toronto, so, you know.
DeMarcus Beasley.
Yeah, I mean, DeMarcus Beasley would be one, potentially. But, you know, there certainly are a few, but, you know, DeMarcus isn't as high profile as he used to be. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we could see something like this happen in MLS, and it's good of, you know, the players union to kind of get on top of you know, the situation a little bit. But, you know, it's, you know, I think when you think of the stars of MLS, you know, you know, not many of them, I guess, are African-American. And those that are, you know, either have, you know, in Beasley's case, have kind of fallen by the wayside in terms of coming to the end of their career. Or, you know, Jozy, who, you know, yes, he obviously plays in the United States for a lot of his away games. But, you know, he's not, I don't think taking a stand like, you know, kneeling during the Canadian national anthem is going to have necessarily the same effect. You know, so it'll be interesting to see what, you know, what guys do if they decide to do something, and then, you know, how teammates respond, because again, it's an international game. You know, a lot of these guys aren't American, and while, you know, President Trump, you know, presidency, I guess, has an effect on the world as a whole, you know, it's not as much of a direct effect on those guys, you know, unless we're talking about, you know, the travel and stuff that we've discussed before. So it'll be interesting to see if this comes to a head and how guys kind of handle it.
One of the things that I love about the sport of soccer and sports in as a whole is that the ability to unite people. You know, initially people were uncomfortable with Colin Kaepernick taking a knee. They were saying he was doing it for the wrong reasons and whatnot, and that's fine. That, you know, you're more than welcome to believe what you wanted to believe about that. The fact of the matter is Kaepernick has backed it up. If you look out on several different sites, several different media outlets, he's donated to Standing Rock. That was one of the Native American reserve that was under kind of siege, if you want to call it, last year. He's used his platform for good. It's just, it's not the story that's necessarily going to sell papers or, you know, do what it's going to do. But I think this anthem protest has evolved more to a direct correlation of being kind of obstinate towards 45 in terms of what he's preaching. I can think about it going back to the USA-Mexico game about 3 days after 45 got elected and feeling kind of a weird sense about the game, especially with the rhetoric that was being spewed about building walls and doing things of that nature. And quite frankly, I couldn't have had a nicer welcome or more productive conversation because people were treating soccer as a view, as kind of a healing, you know, and it was very nice to see that. But, you know, it's more, I don't perceive the anthem kneeling as disrespect towards the flag necessarily. I think it's more of... It's not, you know, and I know there's people out there that will say it is, you know, but it's more of standing in unity to say what you said is wrong and we need to take a stand to show you how wrong you are.
And I think that's sort of how, and we don't have to, this isn't, you know, your a politics podcast, so we won't get into too much, but what Colin Kaepernick was doing, what this has been about and it is not about President Trump. It's about long-standing systemic issues and inequalities within our judicial and legal and criminal system that treat specifically African Americans and people of color in general differently than they do white people. And that's what it's about. To say it is about the president and the president's, you know, words, I guess in part it was a response, as a response to his words, doubling down on that. But it's about deep institutional issues within our country, not just what the president goes on a rant about. I think that's really taking away some of the power in the message when we just can try to say it's blaming it on, you know, whatever the president was complaining about that day and saying it's a reaction to that.
Let me walk it back a little bit there, because I'm saying, I think, in my humble opinion on Sunday, there's no reason why every player shouldn't have knelt. If somebody's calling me an SOB and somebody's sitting there going, you know, they call me any name in the book, I'm going to do whatever I can to stick it to the man. You know, that's the best way I could say it. But I agree with you 100%, Bart, that this, you know, it's, I think Kaepernick's used the platform for good. And albeit regardless of where folks stand on this side of the issue, is there are good police officers out there. I certainly know plenty of them. And there are unfortunately rogue ones, and you need to call out the bad apples every once in a while. And that's, you know, it's great, but to use divisive rhetoric and go into sports, sports is the one place, guys, and I know we're all here for this reason, is where we go to escape, to get out of everyday life. You know, we all have 9-to-5s, we all work very hard, and it's where we go to escape, and we don't need this in the game necessarily, but it's here, we need to address it, it's something we need to talk about. And it's just, you know, it's nice to see athletes stick together and to see these communities come together, the sports community, in essence, come together and coalesce in this interesting time.
And I do think, just because of the kind of political demographic that Major League Soccer attracts, that we are going to be seeing a lot more kneeling in the coming weeks in Major League Soccer. I know there are a number of players who are very vocal about their political views on Twitter. And I would expect some of them to be kneeling shortly. And one player who stands out to me, Brad Evans, always speaks his mind on Twitter about politics. I could totally see him kneeling at the next Sounders game. And I do think it would make the news. And I just hope that the people who are kneeling will keep in mind what the original message of that kneel was. Because I think what the president did this weekend is essentially try to create a wedge issue. His numbers are not great politically, and standing for the Pledge of Allegiance polls a lot better than President Donald Trump does right now. And so if you can get that issue turned into a referendum on the president, then you might get some of those people who are pro-anthem, anti-Trump to become pro-anthem, pro-Trump. That's what I think his strategy is anyway. It definitely seems like there is a strategy behind it. But regardless, I think that this is something that's going to be here for a while. The president has used his pulpit to bring this to the forefront of American society. And so now American society, whether they want to or not, I think is going to have a conversation about this issue and about the issues that Colin Kaepernick brought up initially. And I personally think that's a good thing. I know other people might disagree with me, but I would expect these protests to be coming to Major League Soccer's shores probably next weekend, if not earlier than that.
We'll certainly see on that. We've got at least one protest that's going to be coming to your podcast shores very shortly. And that's against, you know, we talk about using your platform for good or for wrong. And most of the time, Kurt Larson, MLS soccer contributor, noted Canadian writer guy. I think he's at the Toronto Sun. He contributes to MLSsoccer.com pretty regularly, notably objectifying the women on the U.S. men's national team, seeing who's the hottest, or other things. And this was, and I'll admit this, I'm a little bit late to the party with this Kurt Larson story. We were looking over the MLS homepage earlier today. And caught this beauty that let's just say it has not aged well from Kurt, which is the 5 most underappreciated teams in MLS today. And we'll look at the first one, number 5, Toronto FC. Oh, wait, what? Kurt says Toronto FC unappreciated. Hear me out before you scroll down and holler about Larson being a homer. I'm going to be completely honest. I scrolled down immediately and didn't want to read the rest of it because there's nothing where you can talk about the team that has 3 designated players, players that Don Garber paid to just bring directly to Toronto, and also has the best record in MLS at the time, and say they're underappreciated. But the other teams that are underappreciated, you've got the Atlanta United, who's currently sitting number 3, although at the time they might have been number 6 in the Eastern Conference. The Montreal Impact, that one's really aged well, especially after their loss over the weekend. New York Red Bulls at 2 and Sporting KC at 1. Fellas, how, I guess this is just that more evidence that Crew SC are underappreciated, no?
Yeah, I think, you know, Bart, you sent this out to us, you know, just before the show started. And like you said, it's a few weeks old, and obviously some of the stuff in it is a little old. But, you know, I know Kurt. I've met him a few times. He's actually been on this podcast back in previous days. And, you know, I like Kurt, but he does he does tend to write some things that are meant to create some debate, I guess you could say. And this certainly does. I think his intent here was to talk about teams that, you know, across years haven't been appreciated as much as maybe they should be. You know, the Toronto thing, obviously they've gone, he touches on this, from being, you know, a bottom feeder in MLS to, you know, turning things around. Greg Vanney didn't get nominated for Coach of the Year last year. Giovinco felt snubbed for not being in the MVP voting last year. Well, he didn't have a good year. He does make a point about Drew Moore, wasn't considered for last year's Defender of the Year, but that's always seemed to me like a team defensive, you know, their defensive record is more of a team honor. And, you know, he goes on and, you know, he makes points about Atlanta and, you know, having the, you know, probably going to be the only the third expansion team, I'm sorry, to make the postseason. You know, and the Red Bulls here, you know, I think when you point to teams like New York, like Toronto, like Atlanta, who are obviously darlings in MLS because of the markets that they're in, that's going to rub some people the wrong way. You know, Atlanta was on TV more than any other team in the league this year, national TV, I should say, and, you know, no one knew exactly what they were going to do. You know, this could have been a very poor product. I mean, obviously there was some excitement about the players they signed and you know, a young and talented players, but, you know, you don't know how that's going to come together, and MLS could have made a really poor decision there. You know, the fan support's been great. I think that, you know, it just surprises me that he went to some of these teams. Now, the Montreal Impact and Sporting Kansas City, I think I can agree with both of those, but, you know, I think there's been a handful of national writers who, when paying attention to the crew, and I think specifically during the 2015 season, talked about how this is a team that, you know, no one's watching, but is, you know, a lot of fun to watch play. And that's still the case in my mind. Now, obviously this year when they've gone to three in the back and played a little more defensive and whatnot, they've moved away from that a little, but, you know, it's a team with Federico Higuain, who's one of the most underappreciated players in the league in my mind. And now Pedro Santos, Ola Kamara, who doesn't get the credit he deserves for what he does, both within the league and within his own national team setup. Justin Merrim, who, you know, does get some recognition, but, you know, all-star snub included, not enough. You know, this is an underappreciated team. Now, you know, I don't know if it's the most underappreciated team, but would I put it in the top five? For sure. Now, you know, Kurt admits to being a bit of a homer with putting Toronto in there. I think, you know, living in Columbus and covering this team, maybe I'm a little bit of a homer too, but I just, this list blows my mind that, you know, you include some of these major market teams, some really good teams. Toronto is the furthest thing from underappreciated. Even when they weren't very good, I don't think they were underappreciated because of what their fans were doing. So one way or another, and maybe that's not the way Kurt meant it, but underappreciated just seems like the wrong word to use if you're going to talk about some of these teams. And, you know, if the Red Bulls want to be any more appreciated, win a championship, you know, I guess that's the thing. And, you know, Greg Berhalter said when, you know, if Crew SC want more respect, they've got to win things. I think that, you know, that's the case with anyone, but this list just kind of confused me in what exactly he was trying to do here.
Well, not only that, I mean, you talk about the, you know, underappreciated and looking at maybe the body of work. Columbus with the win last weekend, now second all-time in franchise wins in MLS, trailing only the Los Angeles Galaxy, and yet, nah, I know they might have, you know, the second most wins, more than DC United now, but not. I think they're appreciated enough.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, when you say that, it has to do with being there from the start. Obviously, helps, but, you know, I think most people, if you ask to name the top five or the top two, I guess if we're just going to do that, the Galaxy would probably be right there. But I think a lot of people would name, you know, DC United, Chicago. Teams like that.
Seattle.
I think, yeah, maybe. But I think you get
wrong.
Pretty far.
MLS did not start until 2000 and what, 9, when Seattle came in. There were just no other years. It just didn't really count.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I think a handful of people would name a lot of other teams before they get to Columbus, which is a pretty impressive stat for Crew SC.
Well, certainly. Well, we're gonna get some names, at least, or some scores from our contributors here. But first, I want to quick give again name some names this time. Names for our sponsors. That's the Land Grant Brewing Company at 424 West Town Street in East Franklinton, and landgrantbrewing.com to find them online, or the Old North Arcade at 2591 North High Street. And online at oldnortharcade.com. Before we get into a couple of picks, guys, any other parting thoughts that we wanted to get to before we get to picks?
No.
Hearing none. All right.
We might kneel in the press box this weekend, but no one will see it, so I don't know if it counts.
I appreciate it. Appreciate it. We'll do one look for picks then, and we'll go to Patrick Murphy.
Can I eat crow for a second?
Of course. Anytime you'd like to eat crow, Pat. Pat, sorry. Ralph.
Wow.
I know I'm good looking. I know I'm good looking and I have a beard, but, you know, hey.
Have a beard.
I do. Wow. I do. I'll let you touch it after the show. Anyway.
Wow.
So
this is a great show, guys.
It's great radio. Anyway, so I got to give a shout-out to Cincinnati. I know back in June I got absolutely dismantled on Twitter for calling out the FCC supporters after the Open Cup game and, you know, saying that they really kind of put a emphasis on attendance. While I still hold that may be true, they really turned up big for the U.S. Women's National Team game last Tuesday against New Zealand. A great atmosphere. You know, some of the best. It felt really good. It felt like a European atmosphere out down there. And they got, you know, a great crowd on hand. They cheered the home girl, Rose Lavelle, on. And the U.S. cruised on to a nice 5-0 victory. But, yeah, so good on you, Cincinnati. You guys did a really, really nice display for the U.S. Women's National Team. Now get off my lawn.
I'm going to eat some crow, too, because I made fun of Ralph for incorrectly saying that Ola Kamara was what was the word you used, Ralph, that I told you to look up?
He had the yips.
The yips, there you go. But this weekend, I think Ola, whether he was listening or just, you know, felt your yip presence, proved you right with that miss against who'd they play this weekend?
New York.
Yeah. Rebels.
So I'm going to eat crow on that one. Ola Kamara, officially Ralph's yip player of the year.
I'll eat crow too. I said at the last crew tailgate, the last crew tailgate where we had our preseason Cleveland Browns Nordeca party, that the Cleveland Browns would be good this year and they're bad. So I was wrong. Bart, you need to eat crow on?
They've got within 3 or 4 points in the last couple games. At least they're watchable.
Well, that's what the Browns do.
That's what they do every year. This is why I don't want to watch them. Get blown out. If you're going to lose every game, why do you have to make it compelling? Just letting me tune out.
Hey, you could be like AT&T and DirecTV customers and not have 10 TV and see the games at all. They're probably the real.
That would probably be better. Yeah, that's honestly.
Crew podcast, guys. Crew podcast.
Yeah.
All I want is for Jabril Peppers to be decent so I can use the pepper emoji nonstop on Twitter, but he's bad.
It's wow, that's so even more reason for me to not want him to be decent.
I tell everybody to mute me, man. It's not my fault.
All right, scores, predictions, now. Patrick Murphy, go.
This is a DC team that, despite, you know, their record, they've played better of late. You know, obviously we talked about the game last weekend, 4-0, but, you know, they're starting to find something. I think they could challenge Columbus a little bit. I don't think they have enough, especially with how the crew are playing. There's a lot of confidence in this locker room right now. And, you know, you could sense that after the game and talking to the players. I think that Columbus, you know, gets it done. Last home game, too. I think there'll be a lot of motivation. Last week I said 3-1. I'm going to go with 3-1 again. I was almost right.
All right, 3-1 from Patrick Murphy. Ralph Schadel, what do you got?
You know, it's an exciting game, exciting time to be in Crew SC land right now. A player that I'm incredibly excited about is Pedro Santos. Like I said earlier in the show, I think him and Higuain have a really good bromance. Patrick and I, when I pay up on my bet, or Patrick pays on his bet, we're going to try to figure out which Chipotle they go to and see if they have lunch.
What do we bet on again? I forgot. Oh, yeah, Bill and Meat.
Yeah, Clark and Bill and Meat. So when
I'll just
when
make
I win,
a call to Ben Olson. Really need Bill to play this week.
So when I need when I pay up on my bet, we're going to try to see if we can figure out what Chipotle they go to and what lunch they have. So I think, seriously, though, getting back on the rails here, I think they have great chemistry. I think Miram continues to ride his great form. And to go against a weak DC back line who has, you know, arguably the – actually, no, not arguably, statistically the worst goals against average in the league right now. But I'm going to say 3-1. Crew SC get the victory over a Steve Clark-led DC United squad.
Okay, a couple pair of 3-1 predictions. Alex Stanek, what are you going with?
I'm not sure on my prediction yet. My main thing is I am neutral on whether or not Steve Clark is going to start, but I hope he does not start, and I hope Crew win. That way, every time Bill Hamid concedes a goal, Nordeca can chant, "Steve would have saved that," or something along those lines.
You just want me to get Chipotle, and I appreciate that.
It's mostly that I want to mock DC United while at the same time celebrating Steve Clark. I think those two things can happen simultaneously if he does not play, and so that's what I'm hoping for. I think it's going to be a 2-0 victory for Columbus Crew SC. And I think that we'll get some nice close-ups on the TV broadcast of a really sad Ben Olsen, which is one of the best things in Major League Soccer. So, fingers crossed.
Okay, we got 2-0 from Alex Dank. So everyone going with Crew SC to win. I also am going to, I know, surprise a lot of people, picking Columbus to win. I'm going to go with 4-1. And I do think that Steve Clark is going to get some cheers from the crowd. I think he's going to get the start and get some cheers after he rolls it right to Pipa Higuain there 2 minutes in. And Pipa just knocks it in to put Columbus up in front early. And they just go on to roll over a hapless DC United team.
Hey, Bart, would you say that maybe this is Steve Clark's long con?
So, yeah, Steve Clark is a double agent.
With Ethan Finley?
With Ethan Finley.
Yeah, look what Ethan's doing out in another goal for Ethan this week.
Exactly. Just trying to, you know, help Columbus's chances by taking out other teams in the Western Conference.
We lost Mo Saeed, though. He went AWOL. We don't know where he's at right now.
I actually don't. I have no idea.
Is he still
like
in Colorado?
San Jose, Colorado? Yeah, this is one of them. Maybe, who knows?
We had the rescue operation from Minnesota, and then when he went to Colorado, we just kind of lost track of him. We let him do his own thing.
Yeah. He's with Tim Howard now. You want to be careful. You don't want to catch Tim Howard on the wrong day.
You can't have the mediocrity rub off on you, Mo.
Don't talk about his mom.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this week. Thanks for tuning in, guys. We'll see you. Bye, buddies.